Case number 21-5035. Laurie Banarello, appellant versus Deborah A. Haaland, Secretary, United States Department of the Interior. Ms. Bertrand for the appellant, Mr. DeGennaro for the appellant.
Good morning.
All right, Ms. Bertrand, good morning. Please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Joy Bertrand, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Laurie Banarello. This case presents an opportunity for this circuit to join the 11th and 7th circuits in finding that the resolution of adverse employment actions contingent on withdrawal of protected Title VII actions is evidence of retaliation. Knox versus Roper, cited in the appellant's reply brief at 17, talks about a similar circumstance to what happened with Ms. Panarello.
Well, let me interrupt you, because this is the only issue that I see in this case. And I have combed the record, and I see nowhere where a decision maker, not Peyton Williams, who is not a decision maker, but where a decision maker, that would be Fear, or his agent who was delivering the termination notice, ever mentioned the last chance agreement. It was Peyton Williams who said to Fear, will you consider it? He said, yes. He obviously didn't consider it, because Libby delivered this termination notice. Your client asked if it could go to the end of the pay period. He called Peyton Williams, and she told your client, well, you were supposed to be offered the last chance agreement. And she said, I'm not interested in that, or whatever she said. The offer was never made, as far as I can see from this record, by a decision maker. Peyton Williams was discussing it, but where did a decision maker ever relay that to your client? And even your client in her depositions doesn't say that.
Your Honor, Peyton Williams works at the behest of the decision maker. She worked directly with the decision maker.
She's human resources. She has no authority, as far as I can tell, and she even said she didn't, to make the decision. And that's clear from her actions. She said to Fear, will you consider this?
Your Honor, I believe the government agrees that this was extended to Ms. Panarello.
And I think the district court agrees, and I think they're all wrong on this record.
But it's not, the thing is, at this point, we have this discussion of it, and at the summary judgment stage, that is, if Your Honor believes that that is something that hasn't been entirely established, and that is an issue of fact for a jury, especially when the government hasn't contested that it occurred and that Ms. Panarello was given that last chance offer and rejected it because it was based only on the withdrawal of the pending lawsuit.
All right. Well, let's talk about what the district court said. The district court said it came too late. The decision had already been made. That is clear from the record. The termination notice was delivered by Libby. Your client asked for more time. Libby calls Peyton Williams. She says, you were supposed to be offered this. And she says, I'm not interested. And that makes it too late, even if we assume it was offered at that point.
I respectfully think that it wasn't too late. And this is what happened in Roper, or Knox versus Roper, where the decision was made and then the employer came back and said, well, we've decided to fire you. However, if you don't want to be fired, withdraw your pending protected EEO matter. And here, the same thing happened, that yes, the firing decision had been made. And this is, for example, here's an...
But the offer was made by someone who had no authority to make the offer. If that's what you're, if what Peyton Williams said was an offer, she has no authority to make that.
Your Honor, I don't think there's been any factual finding in the lower court confirming that Ms. Peyton Williams did not have the ability.
Well, in her deposition or affidavit, she says she doesn't. But let me, you go on with your argument because I'm taking up a lot of your time.
Sure. Thank you. There's an analogy to this that I would ask the court to consider. And that would be this. If you had an employee who had a pending Title VII matter, whether it was like an EEO complaint or an actual lawsuit, as we had here, and that employee comes in late to work several times, and the employer says to her, we're going to fire you because you've been consistently late to work. We've decided to fire you. And then the supervisor or whomever, HR, and there's been no indication in this record that Peyton Williams doesn't have the ability to communicate decisions from higher ups. And the government has agreed that this was extended to Ms. Panarello. If the employer comes back and says, well, we did decide to fire you. However, if you have sex with me, your boss will drop the lawsuit. And this is, or we'll drop the firing. It would be the same type of quid pro quo as we have here. We've decided to fire you. We're holding your job hostage, but drop your lawsuit. And what's really—
It's not the same though, counsel. I don't think that that analogy works. I mean, global settlements, I mean, I don't know what the latest data is, but you know, it's something, you know, very well north of 90% of civil cases get resolved by settlements. And global settlements are the preferred way to do it. I mean, it's malpractice for a lawyer to settle one case. And if the same party has a different case pending against their client, to try to figure out how to make them both go away. And so I don't think that this is, you're comparing apples and oranges here. And so to me, I don't think that that analogy works. In the way that your retaliation theory has to work, really has to be that they didn't really have any intentions on really firing her at all when they proposed it. Instead, they proposed it so that they could get her to settle a separate lawsuit that she had brought by proposing this kind of without really like meaning to follow through on it, to see if she would be kind of pressured into agreeing to a last chance agreement. I mean, that's the way your theory has to work, right?
Well, Your Honor, I agree with the court that global settlements are always preferred. And one thing that I think is important that the court just noted here is that it would be lawyers do have an obligation to try to resolve as many issues as possible. But here, the lawyers were never presented with this, and they didn't have an opportunity to negotiate. And what Knox versus Roper says in the 11th Circuit is, no, you can't create this kind of contingency, especially on a case that's not related to the discipline issue. And here, in addition to that, we don't have anything in the record about there being any other contingencies regarding this last chance agreement. Ordinarily, as the court is well aware, and as we see frequently with last chance agreements, there's a performance plan put in place. There's things the employer has to do, but things the employee has to do to improve their performance. There was never an issue with Ms. Panarello's performance. And in fact, she stayed working throughout this. She had access to confidential information. She was receiving briefings. She was mentoring subordinates. So there was no performance to be improved upon. The only contingency discussed in this last chance agreement idea that was relayed to Ms. Panarello was that she drop her pending lawsuit against the agency. And that's what Knox versus Roper, and to a related extent, the Coggins decision out of the Seventh Circuit says you cannot do. There is an issue of fact here about whether or not, but for the employee rejecting the term that they drop their Title VII action, they would have been fired. I'm sensitive to time, Your Honor, and I'm at 20 seconds. So I want to make sure that the court doesn't have any other questions for me before Mr. DeGennaro.
All right. Judge Rogers, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. Well, we'll give you a couple minutes and reply then. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. DeGennaro.
Good morning, Your Honors. Assistant United States Attorney Stephen DeGennaro on behalf of the appellee. I would like to begin briefly on this question about the last chance agreement that this court earlier asked about and highlight an additional reason to reject Ms. Panarello's last chance agreement argument beyond that which Judge Henderson had identified. And that is these preliminary global settlement discussions between a human resource official acting at the behest of the deciding official and Ms. Panarello to explore the possibility of a global settlement is not at all dissimilar from global settlement discussions generally, but for the circumstances that in which it came out. And our position would be that this puts the case more in line with the line of authority mentioned in the case that was cited in the Secretary's brief, Snowden versus Zinke, a decision by then Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. That discuss how courts within this circuit and elsewhere have upheld knowing involuntary waivers of then existing Title VII claims as part of a last chance agreement. There's also evidence in the record that the Park Police had not only offered last chance agreements previously to other employees to waive then existing Title VII claims, but that—
Where do you think in the record it is apparent that she was made an offer by someone in a position to make her that offer?
Your Honor, I believe that there was testimony during Ms. Payton's deposition that she had asked Deputy Chief Fear to consider the last chance agreement.
And he said he would. And yes. The next thing we know, she gets a letter of termination. He obviously decided to consider it and reject it from the record.
Yes, I believe that is generally the sequence. It was after the decision had been, the decision on removal had been tendered. Ms. Payton then asked Deputy Chief Fear whether he would consider the last chance agreement. But the government's argument is even—
No. You know, oh, you mean Payton Williams. Okay. Now,
yes.
I get the feeling that, no, you're right, because she said she had that, she said she had the discussion with Panarello on September 9th. And that had to have been when Libby calls her to say, can she extend the termination to the end of the pay period? And Payton Williams says, well, she was supposed to be given this offer. That's her testimony as to when she tells Payton Williams about it.
Yes, that is my recollection as well, Your Honor.
Okay, so I'm still back at who made her the offer? Payton Williams couldn't do it.
Your Honor, the government would characterize the conversations between Ms. Payton Williams and Ms. Panarello as preliminary ones to consider the whether there was some appetite on the part of Ms. Panarello to explore that conversation.
I think that is such a stretch. I mean, think about this. If Libby had done what Payton Williams thought he was supposed to do, that is deliver the message that if you'll drop the suit, will reconsider the termination. He doesn't do that. Payton Williams says to Panarello, well, you were supposed to be given this offer. That's not an offer because she has no authority to do it. And Panarello says, I'm not interested in that. That's all the record shows about the offer.
Yes, Your Honor. And in addition to that, which is which you've identified in the record, that factual circumstance is slightly different from the circumstances presented in the Knox decision, which the record that was developed there was that the employee and the employer had come to an agreement about a way to handle a proposed disciplinary path for that employee after they reached that agreement, but which at the time did not include a waiver of Title VII claims. That employee then makes a charge about disparate treatment in the manner in which the employee, or the employer rather, was meting out certain discipline to its employees on the basis of race. After that charge is made, then the employer adds to the last chance agreement the waiver of the Title VII claim. So even if we accepted for purposes of the argument that the Park Police had tendered an offer by somebody with authority to bind the Park Police in the circumstance, the sequence of that is dissimilar from the manner in which the waiver was added in Knox.
What about the argument made by your friend on the other side that the last chance agreement was anomalous because it didn't have other characteristics that last chance agreements normally have? It only had the waiver.
Your Honor, the government's argument is that because the conversations of exploring the prospect of this global settlement were only very preliminary, there is no evidentiary record to suggest what else would have been included in that last chance agreement. So the record has not been developed because of the fact that Ms. Panarello did not otherwise seek to explore the prospect once she heard that she would have to drop her existing Title VII claims. The conversations ended there, so the record is not developed as to what the contents are, but given that as the non-movement, Ms. Panarello has to show there's a tribal fact as to pretext. Any gaps in the federal or in the evidence there wouldn't support denial of the summary judgment motion, particularly when there's testimony in the case suggesting that the inclusion of last chance agreement within last chance agreements, waivers of then existing claims, is not anomalous in the circumstance, nor something that was disparately offered to Ms. Panarello, either because of her sex or prior protected activity.
But aren't your previous comments supportive of Judge Henderson's point that she doesn't have any burden, absent proof that the offer was extended by someone who had authority to extend it? I mean, she doesn't have any burden. I thought that, I'm saying things Judge Henderson hasn't said, but isn't that where some of her questions lead you? You're acting as though the plaintiff hasn't met her burden of proof yet. She didn't have any burden of proof if the offer was never extended. That's all.
Your Honor, I'm not quite sure I follow the question as to which step of the analysis Ms. Panarello would be.
If you can't understand, I won't repeat it. I won't take up your time. Why don't you continue your argument?
As previously mentioned, on this factual record, we believe that the evidence developed is dissimilar from the cases that Ms. Panarello relies on. I've already discussed the distinctions between this case and Knox, but just to briefly discuss the Cognis Corp case, in that case, the court found as potentially retaliatory the fact that the employer had written the waiver in such a manner that it would have required the employee to waive future Title VII claims that had not yet materialized. And that court had included language about the fact that that employers may not buy a license to discriminate through a prospective waiver. Here, the only testimony developed, assuming an offer in the last chance agreement had been made, was that it would require Ms. Panarello to drop then existing Title VII claims. So that's a reason for finding Cognis Corp distinct from this case. And the Board of Governors decision involved a case where the employees would have been forced to choose between waiving statutory rights to file a charge with the EEO as distinct from bringing a Title VII claim, or forego a collectively bargained for a contractual right to a grievance procedure. Again, no evidence has been adduced that such a circumstance exists here. And unless there are any other further questions from the panel, we would respectfully request that the decision below be affirmed.
All right, thank you. Madam Clerk, why don't you give Ms. Bertrand 2 minutes?
Thank you. One thing the court just mentioned that I think is really important here is where the burdens are. And this case was a summary judgment determination. This wasn't a trial. This was a summary judgment determination. And on de novo, all we're looking for are there disputes of fact here that support Ms. Panarello's claim that her firing for an off-duty DUI in which she was cooperative, presented no problem, certainly honest, constituted retaliation. And the strongest evidence of that is that she was fired. She was offered a last chance agreement by an agent of the agency, that would be Ms. Peyton Williams, and then was fired when she rejected that. We have other evidence of retaliation that goes to all of this that's being proffered by the government being pretext for what was really going on here. And we have the evidence of sworn statements of people involved in the investigation saying the firing of Ms. Panarello was consistent with this agency's pattern and practice of using the disciplinary process to punish people who come forward in EEO matters. That is per se retaliation. And here, the issue is only, are there issues of fact? And this record, particularly just looking at the little piece of the record here that we're talking about regarding who had authority and what was extended to Ms. Panarello and what did she reject versus accept, are issues of fact. This case must be returned to the district court because these are issues of fact that remain in the province of a jury. Does the court have any further questions for me at this time before in the last 10 seconds here?
It doesn't look like it. So thank you for your argument. And Madam Clerk, if you would call the next case.